Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yeah, we did. Started to burn too many things we found. That's the Gloria Starr Williams singing with the great Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia theme song, ground the Grammy-winning album Tomorrow's Children from Appleseed Records. Great to be with you for another hour on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thank you to the crew in New York for being such stalwarts. We're going to have three great guests today, which is always a bit of a technical challenge, but we'll work it out as we move through. I'm going to start with Bob Fuller. Bob, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Harvey.
How are you? Are you in Chicago?
I'm in Chicago, yes.
So I have one really serious and important question for you. Is it snowing here?
It does not seem to be snowing at this very moment, but it has been snowing today. It's been a weird, bitter day, and So it's
all right. Well, we're
going to
be spread all over the country. You're going to be in Chicago. I'm in Columbus, Ohio, where it's supposed to snow tomorrow. And maybe Kennedy, who will be joining us from Southern California, it is not snowing there.
Okay, glad to hear that.
At least to the best of my knowledge. So, Bob, you wrote an award-winning columnist. Your stuff is all over the Internet, and it's always terrific. And you have a very important piece out this week on the elections. You want to talk to us about what you had to say and what
sure.
you're thinking?
Okay, well, I figured it was time to readdress the whole issue of the ways in which democracy and voting rights are suppressed in not the obvious ways of the old days where, you know, this group or that group, whatever, cannot vote, but in more subtle ways. We had those shocking pictures from Arizona of 2 weeks ago, you know, 4, 5, 6 hour lines in Phoenix, and it's in the urban areas, it's in the multicultural areas where mostly these voting problems took place. The recorder, the county recorder, Maricopa County reporter, slashed the number of polling places from 211, I believe it was, that they had in 2012 to 60. So, took three quarters of the polling places away. There was a big turnout. People really, really wanted to vote. It was, this is the most contested and, emotionally charged election that we've had in quite a while. And so there were long lines and lots of people didn't get to vote. And so that, that combined with the primary that we had this week in Wisconsin that was sullied by the state's the new voter ID law that has challenged the right to vote of lots of especially the economically struggling and more marginal, economically marginalized people that still have a right to vote, and their right to vote has been taken away. Students very badly hurt by this bureaucratic restriction, and it's mostly done by Republicans the legislation is passed by the party that cannot win if everybody votes. the Republican Party can only win when the vote among ethnic groups of and the economically disenfranchised, when that vote is contained, the Republicans have a much better chance of winning. So that's what I wrote about, mostly about the voting mess ups in Arizona and Wisconsin. And I also, made a quick mention of the real dark force out there, which is election or, vote fraud, the hacking of electronic voting machines, which you and Bob Fetrakis wrote about. And so I quoted a piece from your column about how easily the old, 10 years old machines, they're now 10 years old, that are used in the electronic voting process, how easily they can be hacked, and the various people that actually have access to these machines. It's not the free, clear, open elections that we used to feel that we had.
Well, Bob Kohler, the number that I've seen most commonly, and you used it in your Common Wonders column, for the number of people disenfranchised in Wisconsin during this primary, it's about 300,000.
Yeah, that's the number that I am familiar with that have been hurt by the new voter ID law. The folks that have the most trouble with bureaucracy for so many reasons, but partly because of, being economically marginalized to begin with. There may be problems, getting the birth certificate, it may cost $100 or $200 to get the documents needed and lots of trips back and forth to, like, the DMV. And it has been called a latter-day version of the poll tax, and it certainly is for people for whom money, costs like that are actually hard to bear. Go ahead.
So we would imagine that the vast number, the majority of the 300,000 people disenfranchised in Wisconsin would have been likely Democrats.
That's the point.
This is critical.
Those kinds of laws are aimed at, people that probably will vote Democrat, and that's why they have, power. That's why a Republican majority legislature will pass laws like that.
Right, and we have to note that I tried to add it up, but in Wisconsin, there were more people were counted as voting for the Republicans than the Democrats.
Okay.
Now, everybody's yelling and screaming between Bernie and Hillary and between Trump and Cruz.
Yeah.
Well, personally, I think the nominee will be Paul Ryan. God forbid. But people are missing the fact that, as best I can tell, in these primaries, more people have been voting in the Republican primaries than in the Democrat. Now, that probably won't hold true in New York or California, but certainly in Wisconsin, the 300,000 people that were disenfranchised, they were mostly Democrat, if you project to the fall election, they make the difference.
Yeah, that is a big difference. As I was writing this column, I had a memory flash of 10 or maybe, I guess, 12 years ago, a Michigan congressman who said rather famously at the time that, a GOP congressman said that the GOP will have a tough time this election cycle unless we suppress the Detroit vote. And that's the same thing that's going on. They, you know, suppress the Phoenix vote in Arizona and suppress, you know, perhaps the Milwaukee vote or whatever in Wisconsin.
Actually, it was in Madison.
Yes, okay.
It
was a big impact on students at University of Wisconsin and other schools around the state because their IDs are, they change addresses frequently and that sort of thing because they're students. And so it's, you know, and they and the ID issued by the school that had been accepted in the past suddenly is not good enough, and they had to, you know, re-register and then vote. A lot of them on Tuesday.
Yeah, it's outrageous. We're talking with Bob Kohler here. His column, Common Wonders, this week features an excellent discussion of the situation, the disenfranchisement of people voting. What we're going to do now, we're going to have Mimi Kennedy. Mimi, you're there, yeah?
Yeah, I am. Hi, Harvey.
Wonderful.
Hi, Bob.
Hi there.
Nice
so
to
we're,
I mean,
hear
you because you've been
Columbus,
writing
Ohio.
About election and protection for a long time, election integrity, as we call it now, and thank you for that.
So we have the technical challenge. We have, I'm in Columbus, Ohio. Bob's in Chicago. You're in L.A., and do we have John Brakey on?
I just sent him the email whereby I told him to call in. I hope he will.
Okay, well, the great crew in New York will let us know. So what we'll do is we'll go around Robin here. Bob has opened up, Mimi will let you talk, and when you're done, just either let me know or go silent, and we'll see if John has joined us. We do have a problem if we have four people on. Sometimes we talk over each other, so we'll avoid that. Mimi, you heard what Bob has been talking about. You've been spectacular on the issue of voter protection, election protection, and election fraud. We know now we've seen very blatant mass disenfranchisement in Wisconsin and in Arizona. It looks like a pattern. As best I can tell, I've been trying to get a clear tally. As best I can tell, more people have been voting in the Republican primaries than in the Democrats, which gives me pause. I wonder what you got to say about that.
Well, I agree with everything you've said. It is voter suppression, and it is obviously happening to the Democrats. I did write down that it's interesting in Wisconsin because if you wanted to suppress certain Democrats' votes, then what you might want to do is match the prevailing media wisdom in that Hillary Clinton is the preferred candidate of urban voters or voters in the African American community, and then you might have a more successful vote than usual in Milwaukee. This is assuming that if voter suppression is a function of intent, and I absolutely believe it is, that you then shape that intent according to the needs of the power structure in any given election, in which case, yes, in Madison, Wisconsin, you would have something whereby the students were pushed out of the electorate. And you're so right about Arizona. I hope John does join us because Maricopa County is 60% of Arizona. And by taking the polling places down from 200, which they had in 2012 in the primary election presidential, interestingly, only the Republicans had a primary because Obama was not challenged and there wasn't anybody on the ballot in the presidential primary in Arizona. So they had 200 polling places for an election that was really just a Republican primary. And here in this election that they knew was a hot primary in both the Republican and the Democratic parties, they reduced the polling places to 50. So that's an example of intent, and they will be filing a lawsuit about this tomorrow. Why would you do that when you knew that you needed more polling places, at least as many as you had in 2012? So I agree with everything you've said, and this is what's so disheartening, is state by state, the states get to set their election rules. Counties have more jurisdiction over processes, and I was just looking at California's website, and reminded that the political parties in California get to set who votes in their primaries. In the Republican Party of California, you cannot participate in their primary unless you're a Republican. However, in the Democratic Party, you can participate in the primary if you registered as a decline to state voter, called no party preference now, NPP. Of course, many young people in California, I experienced during the Obama primary of 2008, had registered American Independent, either verbally when someone was canvassing and registering them verbally and making all the answers themselves, the canvasser, or the kid or new voter, immigrant, signing up, anyone saying, yeah, I'm an American and I'm an independent voter. That's what I want. Well, they were now in a political party where they could not vote for the Democratic candidate because you can't cross over from American Independent Party into a Democratic Party primary. These arcane rules are set by the parties and the states. It is a very high bunch of hurdles that people have to negotiate. And I was on the with Fresno County today trying to follow instructions for somebody to check their registration and become a poll worker. And that was inaccessible information. They basically said, we have the poll workers we want. We don't need any more. And we'll let you know if we want you to be a poll worker. So I thought, well, that's an insider's game there. Up in Fresno, which is pretty conservative. I'm just adding that to the mix.
Well, John Brakey has joined us, Mimi Kennedy. John, can you give us a report from what happened in Arizona? We have Bob Kohler on, who has written about this in his column, but I understand he has some pretty detailed knowledge. Tell us what went on with the vote in Arizona.
Well, you know, I was surprised when I read yours and Bob's article, you know, calling it the strip and the flip. And the only thing I can add to that, the voter suppression was huge, okay? Mimi pretty much explained it exactly the way it was. And we can see clearly with common sense that there was over 150,000 people were suppressed from voting.
Wow.
By the tactics that they used. And clearly you can see it if you look at the numbers county by county. Every county is up 8 to 17%, and Maricopa is down a minus 4% from the only data that you can compare to, which is the 2008, because that's when you had, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans in the same primary, of course, with two different ballots. And there you go. And then, you know, the thing went to stripping. A lot of people went in to vote, and they're trying to explain this thing as it was a glitch, you know, that magic word they always use, you know, when they disenfranchise somebody by computer, is that they went in to vote, and then they find out they're not. So then some people run down and get real pressure on the recorder's office, and what do you think happens? Somebody calls in a bomb threat and clears the building for 4 or 5 hours.
Oh, my God.
That happened in Phoenix and also in Pima County. And if you take Phoenix,
how
and
do you
Pima
come
County,
up with
add
these
it together,
figures?
76% of the state vote.
John Brakey, how do you come up with the figure of 150,000 people being suppressed in Arizona during this primary?
Well, I sent you an email, and you'll see the chart by county. And anybody with common sense can look at the chart, and you can see the percentage of growth and the voting. And if you look at the first line, you'll see that I go by the size. The Maricopa is the largest. You'll see that they're minus 4.10%. And then you look at Pima County, they're up 9.53%. You see what I'm saying? And it's by size. And the next thing you know, about 90%, you know, everybody is up but Maricopa. And then people couldn't even find their precinct to vote at. And it's not a precinct. It's a voting center now, okay? And where the shocking anomaly that we're suing on 3 points, okay? One is the voter suppression, two is the stripping, and three, it looks like a flip.
Wow.
Because
okay.
Of the Hillary Clinton, John, I want to just make that clear. to Bob and to Harvey. John says that in the absentee results, it went 60% Hillary. By the way, he knows something about absentee manipulation because he prosecuted a lawsuit with attorney Bill Reisner to try to get proof of intrusion. He did have some proof of intrusion into absentee ballot results because they count those ballots early, and they also they can tell what party they're coming in from. And it was a bond measure, and they definitely needed it to pass. So there was that, and then Bernie at the polls vote was 60% Bernie, as John points out. It's almost mirror. But I also wanted to say something, John, that I think you left out, which I love. The Secretary of State of Arizona is on your side. She's a Republican, but she said an employee in her office went to vote, and his party registration had been changed. This is how they also disenfranchised people in Arizona this election. And the Secretary of State's in charge of that statewide database, and she said he didn't ask for it, and we didn't do it out of our office. That means somebody's been inside our database changing people's voter party registration. So she's on board with John, too. I just wanted to add that, John. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question for John, too, when talking about the suppressed votes in Arizona, the numbers. Ari Berman had said that 20 to 24,000 independent votes were essentially thrown out because, just as Mimi was saying, in California, independents cannot vote in a Republican or Democratic primary.
No, they can. Bob, I want to be really clear. Independent is the name of a party, so we can't.
Yeah, okay, that's a party, right.
But the nonpartisan voter can only vote in the Democratic primary and not vote in the Republican primary.
I see, okay.
And
now,
in Arizona, you're right, Bob.
In Arizona, only Republicans or Democrats can vote. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And that there were lots of voters in their own election. Understand that?
That's exactly how it works. But talking about provisionals, there were 24,000 provisionals in Maricopa County. 20,000 were thrown out. Now, let's talk about Pima. They had 8,500, and 5,600 were accepted.
Okay.
So those numbers are way off, too.
Okay.
So why did they throw them out in Maricopa County, John? What's the given reason?
Well, they're claiming that they didn't have the right to vote in the Republican or Democratic primary. But, you know, in our state, only the presidential preference election, people cannot vote unless they're in the party. But when we have a state primary for congressional districts or federal races, they are welcome to vote. Only the presidential preference, they deny the people to vote. And it is kind of bad because, you know, to pull off one of these elections statewide costs $8 to $10 million.
Yeah.
And immediately, 1.2 million people cannot vote. And, you know, a lot of people want to vote because they recognize Sanders as an independent, and they're an independent.
Not to mention they're confused because the last time they went to the polls, the rules were different. I understand this as a poll worker. They'll say, this was my polling place last time. I was able to do this last time. And you go, well, the rules changed, or it's a different kind of election. It's a city election. It's not a federal election. It's a primary election, not a general. People just look at you cross-eyed and go, I have no idea what you're talking about. And what you've just said, that only the president, so they go, I can vote. I'm a nonpartisan voter. I'm going to go vote for Bernie or Donald Trump or whatever. And they go, no, you're not.
Yeah.
Okay, we're talking with Bob Kohler, Mimi Kennedy, John Breaker about the primaries. We have a caller, David, from San Francisco. David, what you got?
Well, hi, Harvey. As a matter of fact, I'm calling from Abalone Alliance, Safe Energy Clearinghouse. So greetings from San Francisco.
Thank you.
Hey, you know what I wanted to ask? I remember Greg Palast talking about this a bunch of years ago, and one of the things that shocked me the most was that the companies, basically, as soon as you vote, your vote becomes their property, and if they do a recall, we have to pay them a service fee because they have essentially copyrighted our vote. And I'm wondering if your guests have any knowledge of this. How many states, or is it countywide that this is happening? And how we can, use lawsuits or something to retrieve our vote?
I'm on the line. Yeah.
Well, thinking about this, because that's kind of my specialty, okay?
Let's hear it.
You know,
go ahead.
Every state is different. It's very important that you understand the titles and become a watchdog, because that's what I am. I'm a watchdog, and I get to know the laws better. And what I like doing to these people when they don't follow the law is to do a mandamus act. And a mandamus act is that the law states that you shall do the following, and you're not doing it. You're not doing the hand count right. You know, you're doing it in reverse. So you file, and if you win, you get your fees back and your costs, and you know, and you bill out for, you know, $75 an hour, and your lawyer gets paid. And I do a lot of those, and it works. I really do. I'm just sad to say that there's not more people in the country who do what I do, to get into the front line, you know, like Bob does and Hartland. And you know, you guys in Ohio, you guys rock for what you do up there, okay? We learned a lot from your actions. You know, in Arizona, Harvey, we found a man just like Mike Conley who was programming 12 out of the 15 counties. He was a kingpin, a man in the middle. He was working for the Secretary of State, and he did all he did in Arizona since 2003 to 2014 on a 1099 form, and he was getting paid in an election cycle $2 million almost.
Because they copyrighted the vote?
Well, the bottom line is, the reality is that the entire election, almost the entire election, in 2016, will be conducted on privately owned electronic voting machines, as David has pointed out. Now, the ownership of the ballots, I've never heard it put quite that way.
I have.
You have. But
I have, yeah. I remember in Alaska, this is sometime back, 2004, maybe 6, they sued the Secretary of State to see... they wanted to see the actual ballots, and I think it was on, must have been on Darius, but the private company told the Secretary of State, we are a private company. If you saw the ballots, the votes now, they have become embedded in our software, and to show the public our software program would be to give away the trade secrets by which we make a living. It's our software program, it's our trade secret, and your votes are now part of it. That was the private company's stance, and I do think they lost it. And I don't know, I mean, as in so many of these election stories, then what happened? Did the Secretary of State demand? Was the suit lost? Did the person concede? But that was argued, and I think the argument was very quietly somewhat defeated. And one of the reasons that L.A. wants a publicly owned system that it is developing now, which will have a paper ballot in it, but the software will be publicly owned, is so that the public can look, or engineers, at the software, and so that no votes will ever become embedded in it and not be available. We'll be able to look at all the mechanisms. They'll still be able to hack and hide, but it will be deterred by the fact that everybody will be able to look at that stuff, and the layer of private deniability, the registrar and the Secretary of State going, we can't do anything. We got these contractors. It's not part of the contract. They won't show us. That has been a dodge for about 10 years now, and that's going to go away increasingly. But, yes, to answer the question, I have heard of that, and I have heard of more than that. We wanted to know how many provisional votes were cast in Los Angeles per precinct and how many were accepted and counted per precinct. And we were told in 2006, I believe, you can't have that. Our contract with the Diebold-related software firm who does the provisional stuff for us does not include asking them for that data as a separate spreadsheet item. So you'd have to pay, I think it was something like $15,000 to a private contractor to have them work that out in a spreadsheet. And, of course, the activists didn't have $15,000. To this day, we don't know how many provisionals are cast per precinct, and of those provisionals, how many are counted. We have the aggregate number for the whole county, but it's impossible to trace problems per precinct or how they did something or, in fact, how much they're counting for the provisional ballots and why they throw out any of them.
Well, you know,
God, it's astounding. I want to jump in here. We've got
a good crowd on the phone line, so we got to be careful not to talk over each other. But we have pointed out here, thanks to David's call and Mimi and John's explanation, the reality is that our elections, our public elections in this country, are conducted on privately owned machines. And our rights to information after the votes are cast are limited. Bob Kohler, do you want to comment on
that?
This
is a lot of stuff being stirred up here, stirred into this pot. And what it makes me think of is that, you know, when we talk about the idea of democracy, it's a value. It's something that, you know, what makes somebody stand in line for 5 hours? What makes people, you know, march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge and, you know, and risk their lives to get voting rights? Because it is a deep, deep human value. Democracy, the right to vote, the right to participate, the right to have a say in the country's future. But when you look at the reality, it's a game full of rules, bureaucracy, you know, and some of it, of course, there has to be, you know, certain procedures that, you know, that facilitate everyone's right to vote. But the cornerstone of those procedures is far from we want to facilitate everyone's right to vote. No, the cornerstone, there is no cornerstone. It's people playing all sorts of games, and mostly the games they're playing are, though we are in power, we have to figure out how to stay in power. Democracy can be such a nuisance to people want to stay in power.
It's
and I think
nuisance.
That's what we're looking at with all
if,
of this.
If I could add something, John Brakey.
Yes,
yes,
John,
please.
Go ahead.
Is that a perfect example of what he's just talking about is that I've been canvassing state to state, tracking the vote by mail and things like that. The first one I really got into, because I've done that state twice, is Massachusetts. I went back to examine the election. And I want you to know that 351 municipalities in Massachusetts, and they run their own elections, and they hate doing it. 68 of these smaller municipalities decided they were going to hand count their own vote. And they did not want the corporations counting it. Blessed those 68, you know? Well, I want you to know in this last election, Bernie Sanders won those 68 by the average of 17.9% on a hand count, which equaled 2.69% of the state vote, okay? And he lost the state by 2%. Figure that one out.
Yeah, that's a fascinating number, fascinating.
And you can find this on electionnightmares.com, which is a site that we started our campaign this year. You know, we film everything, and, you know, who knows? We may wind up putting a reality show out on this craziness, because people have to really see what it's like to be an election integrity expert on the front line dealing with a lot of sociopaths.
Well, we have this situation now. Where there are repeated discrepancies in the results from hand-counted paper ballots, precincts with hand-counted paper ballots versus those with machines. And the first instance of this that really jumped out at us was in New Mexico in 2004, where John Kerry won every precinct that had hand-counted paper ballots and lost every precinct that had machine counts.
Yeah,
and so there's clearly, and he actually noted this, John Kerry has never said anything about the theft of the 2004 election, but he did mention that in a conference call that Bob Fitrakis was on. And, you know, it's pretty astounding. As most of you know, I'm sure, Bob Fitrakis and I have put forward the Ohio plan, which calls for universal automatic voter registration at the age of 18, a four-day holiday, national holiday for voting, so the working people have equal access to the polls. The polls should be worked by our high school and college students and our elders at $15 an hour, and we should have universal hand-counted paper ballots. That's for the mechanics of voting. And, of course, there should be ample precincts. We also, I've had a couple of emails about the use of the U.S. mail for voting in Oregon and Washington.
mail-in ballots, and also you get mailed a ballot that you can take in to a precinct. And people seem to think that that works pretty well. Mimi, do you want to comment on that?
The use of, I'm sorry, I was distracted by a message someone's trying to get through to me about EI, but it has nothing to do with this call. So please ask the question again. I'm sorry to waste your time. Go ahead.
Well, the use of the mail,
it's not a good idea. There have been instances about things being, you know, lost at the post office. I remember in L.A. seeing our register testify to our county board of supervisors. Well, yes, those were found in a post office. It was just a box that was neglected. It was nobody's wrongdoing. And that sort of thing I have heard anecdotes about before. Also, in much of the United States, the U.S. Post Office is not actually delivering mail on the last leg of mail. It has been privatized out to cheaper companies to get the mail into your post office box or to your house, rural, from a post office center, a rural USPS. And, you know, they're trying to close those. So the more that that's privatized, the more the vote, again, falls into private hands, this time a paper ballot, but it's in private hands. And, again, with voting, once you've cast your vote, it becomes an anonymous digit or even an anonymous paper. It's supposed to be separated from that outside signed absentee ballot envelope. And it's fungible. It's like a dollar bill. $1 bill kind of looks like another unless you're, you know. So I don't think it's a good idea at all. I'm not a fan of vote by mail in Los Angeles. It's another thing that is privately contracted out to, guess who, some people from ESNS. ESNS and Diebold were the two voting systems run by two Republican-friendly brothers, the Yurosevich brothers. And they reaped billions from HAVA, and I think that they were in on the HAVA negotiations so that they could say, this is what we have the capacity to do, and HAVA's mandates brilliantly fit those capacities. So ESNS now is subcontractors Enron style, and one of them has been in charge of our vote by mail. They mail them out, they bring them back in, they keep the rosters. You know, it's a public-private partnership, and that happens all over. So vote by mail to me is a capacity for insider fraud along a chain of custody that is not overseen by the public, that does involve the post office and now privatized mail deliveries. So it's a bad idea, and LA's new system is going to solve some of that, but I won't go into that now unless somebody asks.
Well, I'll just back up everything that Mimi said forever. Because we have the same problem in Arizona, private corporations like Runbeck, who prints the ballot, mails the ballot, receives the ballot, scans the signatures, okay, and then sends the ballot in an envelope over to the recorder's office. I find that distant because you have to realize that when HAVA passed, half that money went into statewide database development. And these people know who's on the move. Okay, I say the heck with it. I'm moving to New York. Maybe some corporation might cast a ballot for me. Who knows? They got my signature on file if I'm voting by mail. Okay. You know, I study vote by mail in Pima County for years. They like to count about 10 days ahead of time because they mail out vote by mail. Well, I guarantee you, I can show you report after report that they were printing the election summer report because we did break through and get the databases. And when I got the databases, I got everything. And it was a treasure trove. We got Diebold in 2006 or 7 to turn over something like 800 databases that we had in Pima County. And what we got out of them was incredible information. And a lot of it I passed to Bev, and Bev Harris is still working on some of this stuff.
John Brakey, let me jump in here. If you had your way, how would we vote?
I would, you know, the best election I ever monitored was on the Apache tribe, San Carlos Indians. And, you know, it was a celebration of democracy. Everybody was off that day. You know, I saw them bring in their prisoners in orange jumpsuits and brought them to their precinct so they could go vote because they're still part of us. Around the precinct, there were people campaigning and meeting and having a cup of coffee with their neighbor. And then when the polls closed, They were there waiting for the result. That was community.
Let me just jump in. That's a wonderful story. And what, you know, what strikes me so glaringly is how there is just no, you know, central public unity around the idea of elections. I think maybe there used to be, but even the cost of elections, you know, Arizona, you know, the cutting of the poll places was blamed on the money was slashed, the funding for funding elections was slashed. You know, maybe that's true, maybe that's only somewhat true, but it's just part of this larger pattern of America, the United States, not funding its vital infrastructure. The only money that goes unquestioned and unchallenged is the money for the defense budget, for the military-industrial complex. You know, $500 billion, you know, plus, you know, maybe, you know, I mean, trillions of dollars to fight various wars. There's no money for elections. There's no money for voting. There's no money to fix, you know, the lead pipes in Flint, Michigan, and everywhere else. All of the infrastructure is being allowed to go, into total disrepair as we move from whatever we used to be, maybe kind of a democracy, to something that is really like a corporatocracy. And I love Harvey. I love your plan, you know, about the 4-day election. I mean, the 4-day holiday around the elections, all of that stuff. You know, why is that not the center of this country? If democracy is such a big deal, and it's so important, you know, as to who we are, why do we not put enormous public energy into this instead of, you know, privatizing one piece after another, so that, you know, now there's no large public discussion about integrity, you know, election integrity. When I was when I was growing up, that was still part of the discussion, the importance of, you know, vote counting, you know, the fairness of the process and all that. It's not even discussed anymore.
Bob, you want to tell us what your view of the way elections should be?
I'm sorry, did...
Yes, okay. Sorry about that. John Brakey?
Yes.
Your experience on the reservation there, have you seen anything else? Well, compare that to what happened in Maricopa County last time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I'll just say at this time right now, I'm at my lawyer's office, and tomorrow we are filing an election challenge, okay? There's a possibility, hopefully, that I'm going to have several major candidates jump on because we are nonpartisan. I'm hoping that with your help and Bob's help that we can go ahead and get the Green candidate to join our suit, okay? I'm talking to Rocky Della Fuente, who's on the ballot in most of the states, and we also are talking to the Sanders campaign because they came in town. I worked with them for 3 or 4 days, giving them the lay of the land, and they were doing the provisionals, and I'm hoping that they're going to probably by Monday will join our lawsuit. Okay, well, we have to file because of a deadline, so we're putting in because you only get 5 days to make a challenge. And basically, it's three parts, the voter suppression of 150, the stripping of people's rights to vote, like you guys talked about in your article, and then the third part is the serious anomalies in the vote by mail, okay, which is just a hideous process. We think that we got a great case, but we know they'll never really look at the ballots because I know that we might as well be, DRE because we spent 9 years trying to look at the ballots on the RTA and went through the appeal process twice, winning it the first time, and then corruption shut us down the second time because we were getting too close. We're hoping to present in court and live broadcast by Internet to the whole world, okay, the malfeasance that is done in our election process that we have documented in video going back as far as 1996 to what happened with the Pat Buchanan election and the first time they had machines, and using the campaign manager who became a state senator for 11 years, who's just a dear friend of mine, even though she's on the right. That's Senator Karen Johnson. So we think this, that we are ground zero, and we're sending a message out that we're not taking it anymore. And there's a lot of people who are going to make sure we fill those courtrooms with people, and I have to have butts and cans outside and make a noise for injustice.
Okay, very good. Beamy, you want to jump in, and then Bob?
Yeah. Well, I'm on the advisory panel for a new voting system for Los Angeles, and Dean Logan followed Connie McCormick, who was a very problematic registrar. Connie wanted Diebold machines and DREs all over California, starting in L.A. County, which is 4 million voters. It's the third largest voting jurisdiction in the nation. We got rid of Connie. She had appeared on the cover of Diebold brochures going, L.A. registrar Connie McCormick says Diebold products are how I run elections. Anyway, Dean Logan has been convinced to move away from even only OptiScan, and he wants a new voting system for Los Angeles. And I was on the panel, and I got them to establish the non-negotiable criterion of a paper ballot. So it's going to be a paper ballot marker. The disabled community insists on voting on a touch screen. I get it. And so this touch screen is where you make your choices, but it produces a paper ballot, and that paper ballot is counted outside that machine on a scanner, and it can be counted by hand. So my next move is teaching a citizen army how to count the ballots that will be produced by LA's new system, and then we're going to go in and we're going to be the hand counters of the LA County elections. That's how to do it. These things, some are controversial. I believe that we may need to have a period of voting, 4 days perhaps, and a weekend plus some days off, and we need to, if there's going to be voting centers instead of precincts, it's very expensive to run an election. 4,000 precincts have to be staffed by 4 or 5 poll workers. They never have enough in Los Angeles, and it's a mess. The poll workers, really, it's complicated. They're not trained for it. They say the wrong things all the time. I've been a poll worker with people that were troubled about how they were doing the process, and I've been voting and always seen the same problems while I'm there for 10 minutes. So I would like to have 4 days of voting and a voting center. The trouble is, and always a paper ballot, and I want video cameras on the chains of custody. I want them on the ballots, ballot box at the voting centers. I want them in the trucks and on the people who come and get that and take it in the truck, and I want it in the chained cage where it arrives until it is counted at the county registrars. Then I want ballots on the hands that are counting or the OptiScanners that are counting. We don't have to see faces to getting into all that privacy stuff. But this is appropriate technology. Security cameras, we have them at banks, we have them on money. Now we need them on our ballots. We need paper ballots, I would say, over a 4-day period, a lot of chain of custody protection. And I want to end provisional voting, and that will unfortunately be dependent on a statewide database so that you can go in on the third day of voting and say, I want to vote, but I'm 20 miles away from where I live, but I still want to have my congressional guy. I want to have my, you know, whoever is the local on my ballot. So they will produce a blank sheet for your proper ballot, and you will be able to go to this voting machine and fill it in with all the characters that you want to vote for, even though you're 20 miles away from where that ballot is usually given. Now you've voted, and you can't walk into another place and say, I want to vote. Your vote is over. But that would have to be determined in a statewide voter database that the county is then in charge of for those 4 days of election. It's complicated election administration. I get it, especially in Los Angeles. But we need to step up as people, because we serve on juries. We get auto licenses. We go through 8 to 12 to 16 years of education. Guess what? Voting is this important. We need a little education. We need a little time set aside. We need some security cameras on that stuff that's important as money, much more important than money. And that's how it, and everybody has to sit up and take notice that this is happening. It's not just for some people. It's for all of us. That's what I'd like to see.
Very good.
If I can add, cameras work, because I caught him last November.
My addition to all of this would be the media, and you know I would love to see the media actually concerned about the election process, you know, beyond the foolishness of the horse race analysis that dominates all media thought with zero question of any of the things that we have brought up today that you know that's been discussed on this show, and you know I mean to me this you know this is the crucial kind of you know the media is the glue that holds together the you know the public consciousness, the public awareness. I you know you know in my tiny niche in you know in this world I will continue to write about this sort of thing. I believe it's very important to start, you know, spreading the idea that, you know, the awareness out to the public about the election, you know, the four-day election process, everything that has been discussed here today is very much the sort of thing that needs to be talked about. Elections need to be valued. They need to be honored. I mean, we have these national holidays that are absolutely nothing but days off, you know, or maybe we get fireworks if it's the 4th of July. But there's, you know, why not have holidays that actually resonate with the real meaning, you know, this the alleged true meaning of this country? And anyway, I make a commitment to be part of that process, and you know, mostly the media has lost total interest in the reality of elections, and you know, and just yawns at any of the problems that are thrown out there for the most part that are brought up, and it's a terrible thing.
It is, and you know, the horse race dominates. Last night, Tuesday, the night of the Wisconsin primary, I almost destroyed my television set. But Bernie Sanders was giving his usual pithy, you know, content-filled speech after winning the Wisconsin primary. And right in the middle of it, Anderson Cooper cuts in and says, well, we've had enough of that, and turns to all these idiots in the studio to do analysis of you know, who needs to hear these people? Bernie's talking about substance, and that's, then we got to go hear about the horse race. It's just annoying. So, Bob, thank you very much.
You bring up an interesting point, and I, as an actress, am very aware of this. Anybody who's on television has a career as a performer. And what we have been experiencing in our privatized media, I don't expect the media to be public anytime soon, including National Public Radio, who are careerists, is they're trying to preserve their jobs, whereas candidates are auditioning for jobs. And they basically sit there like the guys on American Idol and go, thank you very much, that's enough, we've heard from you. And now we, who are preserving our jobs, are going to look cute, sound smart, and charm you to death because we're why you're watching TV. That's happening, and I see very definitely the confusion between the narcissism of a performer and the needs of democracy. And they are being confused, and they have to be unconfused. Donald Trump is going some towards helping us unconfuse them, and I hope we don't have to suffer terribly in the process.
Right.
Yes, I want to jump in now. Now we've had all this content, and we have just a few minutes left. I'm actually going to throw in a horse race thing because I am terrified about what happened in Wisconsin. First of all, the Republicans outpolled the Democrats, and Ted Cruz got enough votes to slow down Donald Trump, which I think is going to lead to a brokered Republican convention. And Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, and I really hold Hillary more responsible than Bernie for this, have crossed the line where they're yelling at each other for not being qualified. These are three bad developments in my world. And I think what's going to happen is that, this is my prediction, and I'm about to write about it, but I'd like to hear your opinion, is that we go into a brokered convention with the Republicans in Cleveland, and the nominee is going to be Paul Ryan. He is backed by the Koch brothers. If they get enough votes to stop Trump from getting the election outright, and they wind up with an open convention, the delegates are going to be in a free-for-all. Paul Ryan scares the hell out of me. In my point of view, I think he's the most dangerous of all these guys because he comes off reasonably sane. And, in fact, he's a crazy man based on the whole Ayn Rand philosophy. And meanwhile, Bernie and Hillary are tearing each other up. They have been getting, because of the disenfranchisement that's been practiced by the Republicans, the Democrats have been getting a smaller turnout in the primaries than the Republicans. And if that translates in the fall, the Republicans will win. It's clear enough to me. Mimi, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, the media has suppressed the vote as well in terms of enthusiasm. Bernie clearly has the enthusiasm of the country and the coming generation, and a lot of them won't vote because they're students. Not until you're late 20s are you ever in a voting jurisdiction for long enough to make sure you're registered and you know where you're going to vote. The rest of it is a free-for-all. So the Republicans have made their bed, and they lie in it. They lied in their bed, and now it's made. They had two stolen elections. They've been stealing smaller elections for the House straight along, and I know that's true, even though somebody would say that was a conspiracy theory. So the American majority is discouraged by the fact that they look around and go, I don't think anybody wants this, and yet we have it anyway. So we are discouraged from voting. And the primary process may do this. If the election for the Republicans is undermined so that Trump gets thrown out, they're going to have some mad militia people on their hands. And I don't know what will happen because, you know, it's not rational. They're not going to go, oh, it's what the party wants, best for the party. No. In fact, I think they'd vote for Bernie if we had a Bernie candidacy. But I don't know that they will. So we're going to have, you know, the hated feminazi woman who kills babies versus the cute, squeaky, big-eyed, jug-eared guy from Wisconsin. And, you know, very few people will vote because people will not care about this enough. Some people recognizing the threat of another Republican presidency will vote against Paul Ryan, and they will vote for Hillary, 60% of them holding their noses. But it'll be just weird enough that the fraud capacity can be exercised, because when you can pass the smell test and tell America 51% of you wanted Paul Ryan, he's in, most people go, oh, fuck, not what the fuck, that can't be right. And if you want to find out how it happened, you have to go to every county in the United States with a lawyer, the way John Brakey is in Maricopa. Every county in the United States, 7,000 voting jurisdictions, who has the money? That's what I see. So I hope that Bernie gets in, and I hope the Republicans have to go with what their voters wanted.
Thank you. Thank you so much for New York, John Brakey. Bob Kohler and Mimi Kennedy will be back next week. A great show.
Okay.
Thank you all so much. Come out and vote.
Don't you know we're going to have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're going to have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost. So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things.